south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, we're back in the saddle again after about a week and a half of seminar this and that. And I must say, as a general comment, man, were these guys and gals serious about leaving the States and coming down to Latin America. Yep, having a plan B is looking better and better all the time. And we're not talking about a plan B that involves grabbing a shotgun and going down and guarding grandma's Minnesota root cellar. Used to be when I first started doing these expat insider plan B seminars 5 or 6 years ago now, half the crowd was seeing the writing on the wall that the U.S. was on its way down, and the other half were just looking for a nice sun in the fun retirement, a place that's cheap and has perfect weather. Well, you know, everyone still wants that, but boy, has that been pushed way down the list. Now, note, I don't live in the U.S. and I haven't for 27-some years now, so everything I hear about what's happening up in the States either comes from the internet or somebody's version of the news. I usually stick completely to the alternative news channels and services. Of course, I get a lot of information about what's really happening in the U.S. from gringos down here with boots on the ground, too. However, I do once in a while switch on First World mainstream news and TV just to see what the enemy's doing, or until I just can't stomach it anymore, whichever comes first. Usually around 5 minutes does it for me. By the way, sometimes some fresh new gringos down here and brand new expats will say, Johnny, did you catch The Walking Dead the other night, or Homeland, or House, or Game of Thrones? Whatever the cable TV flavor of the month or season is, and I'll say, nope. And they'll say, it's really cool, man. Have a look at it. You should. And I'll say, well, you know, I don't like to get addicted to those things. Last one I watched with any regularity at all was The Sopranos. And that was, what, maybe 20-odd years ago? And I didn't even see all of them. In fact, I'd rather read a good book. In fact, I'd rather read a bad book. In fact, I'd rather read the back label of a Drano bottle while sitting on the John. So am I a cable TV snob? No. Whatever floats your boat. I'm not a Luddite. I like certain movies and documentaries. However, if every TV station in the world were suddenly hit with a directed EMP wave and was knocked out, I wouldn't even notice. But where were we? Oh yeah, talking about the seminar. Anyway, everyone who attended my latest seminar said much the same thing. The U.S., they say, is not the one they grew up in, and there's no way to fix it. So with that eventuality looming in their thoughts, they want a plan B that'll allow them to continue to live as a first world person if and when the walls come tumbling down up north. As one attendee put it, he said, "We'll always have the poor and we'll always have the rich. It's the middle class that's being eliminated." And he said, even if you think you're part of the middle class right now, if you look back 20 or 30 years ago at what middle class really was, there's only one conclusion. You've lost ground, and it's going to get worse, much worse. And you know what we talked a lot about at the seminar, both in the classroom and privately at the lunches, dinners, free times, get-togethers and such? People were talking about how to get their assets out of the first world, out of the States, before it's not possible to do that anymore. Now, we know how you can get your own butt out of the country. You know, travel a bunch, get your boots on the ground, find your own perfect or not-so-perfect little paradise. You know, nothing's perfect, right? But you can get close. Then you apply for temporary or permanent residency. Of course, you'll have to jump through the hoops in the States that are required, those hoops becoming more numerous and taller, and some are even flaming these days. Courtesy, of course, not of the foreign country you want to live in, but courtesy of good old broken bankrupt Uncle Sam. He's the one that ultimately puts up all those barriers to his sheep leaving the barn. And the clock's ticking on that, and the spring is winding down. And then once you start your residency period, you can go 5 years or so and actually get nationality and passport. And at that point, whatever depths your first world Big Brother state has fallen into, you'll be able to watch it all go down the tubes from a nice safe distance of 1,000 or so miles at least. Where? Well, not from Granny's fully stocked root cellar up in Minnesota, where it's 15 below zero, but from your new Latin American chosen country, where you are a full bona fide citizen. Where stores not only don't stock mittens and snowshoes, they don't even know what they are. And if suddenly, or not so suddenly, you find out more and more restrictions are being put on travel, on your U.S. passport, that is, you can just flip Uncle Sam the bird, or moon him if you want. Because guess what? you've got another passport. You're a citizen of a country or countries with major freedoms in tech, like the right to travel without restriction, a country with virtually no big brother. Oh, it's true, the U.S. and the U.N. try to come down to these third world countries and buy off the corrupt politicians. Are there any other kind? So yes, they effectively buy them off. And of course, first world governments hand off to third world governments all kinds of sophisticated equipment and train some of their people, soldiers and such, in the black and surveillance arts. But guess what? What they forget is that everyone down here in the government, that is for sale. Sometimes for a hot lunch, a gallon of gas, or a bag of Twinkies. Oh, by the way, I've yet to see Twinkies down here in my 27 years. However, Bimbo, the biggest bakery in the world now, and they're from Mexico, has bought up Wonder Bread and the Hostess franchise, which owns Twinkies and Hostess cupcakes. Now, I've seen the cupcakes, and they look and taste like plastic-coated, pre-digested shale slag. Yes, they've got that first-world recipe down exactly. You might remember me mentioning Bimbo some time ago when they got caught for putting sawdust in the bread, but, you know, because the surveillance state really doesn't exist down here, neither do alphabet agencies like OSHA or the militant FDA. Oh, that's not to say they haven't got organizations, governmental organizations, that have similar titles in Spanish, but they sit on their dead asses and do absolutely nothing. Now, I'm not complaining. In fact, this can be a good thing, you know. In fact, give you a little example here. Being that we had some heavy boots on the ground here in Guatemala for the past couple of weeks, I ran into a couple of interesting upscale Latin types. Yeah, you run into those gringo wannabe types, especially at four-star hotels. Why? Because governments and NGOs in the UN, etc., are always having some kind of little conference in a four-star hotel. Why? Because they've got all the first-world amenities. The bar with the blue label Johnny Walker, the Perrier water, the jazz trio, the pool, the dry and the wet sauna, the Benihana clone, and the humidor with the Cuban cigars. All the many perks that befit those useless slugs on government expense accounts. You know the drill. So, the other day I was sitting in the lobby on one of those nice soft leather chairs. I couldn't help but notice the guy sitting next to me, his fingers dancing away on the latest Android. The guy all slick and smart in his brand new suit, getting a 50-cent shoe shine. Yep, they are 50, even 30 cents down here. How much are they up by you? Anyway, I instantly noticed that he had a tiny little government lapel pin. You know, like a Rotary Club pin. And it said, in tiny letters, Ministerio de Ambiente. Ministerio de Ambiente, that would be Minister of the Environment. Their Latin version of the first world EPA. Insert laughter here. No joke. Because, you see, the environmental protection agencies in nearly all Latin countries except now Costa Rica and Panama are absolutely toothless. For example, a friend of mine, a Colombian civil engineer, he said, if you're building a hotel in Colombia or Brazil, Guatemala, Honduras, the latest thing is that you now have to apply for an environmental impact study. I know. It's been a stateside routine for, what, 30, 40 years now? Well, as the usual lag time would have it, it's just starting to catch on down here. And only with big projects, of course. So, if it's a hotel, you hand in your plans, your landscaping plans, your drainage plans, excavation details, etc. They get submitted to the local Ministerio de Ambiente. But he said, don't forget to include a couple of round-trip tickets to Disney World in Orlando, or maybe a shopping trip to Miami. That'll certainly grease the wheels and get you to the top of the pile. That's what he said, anyway. So, pretty much all contractors know the score and who to pad. But he did say these days it's very difficult to get a mining project passed. Pretty much everything else is a go but mining, even with big-time bribes. You know why? Because, and this is exactly what he said, U.S. NGO do-gooder agencies are flooding down to indigenous communities and giving away free stuff, rice, beans, outhouses, water purifiers, and in one case, even live chickens. Turns out they're giving away 10 hens and a rooster. Yep, it's the harem life in the poultry world where things are not fair. Yes, these first world NGOs and the UN are giving indigenous people useless, even more than useless, even dangerous vaccines. But they're free. Shades of Bill Gates, huh? Yep, they give away the local chicken licking and Happy Meals to get them into one big place, a church, a town hall, so they can hear the spiel that the do-gooders and the NGOs and the UN have put together, explaining why mining is bad and that when companies come in, they'll ruin your rivers, your air, your landscape, your natural environment, etc. Meanwhile, it's the village elders and leaders that make off with a pot of cash. Which, by the way, over the years, they have done. I've seen it. But, you know, it's not all about going in and screwing the natives, taking their natural resources, and leaving them with a hellhole and screwing up their pristine environment. Because, you know what? They never lived in a pristine environment. You just check out any Latin town, even the tiny ones, and you'll see the locals, the indigenous and the Latinos, are serial polluters on a pretty big scale, too. So the mining companies come in, they build roads, infrastructure, give these little pueblos electricity, even clean water, kinda. They bring technology, communications, etc. Soon enough, everyone has a cell phone. You could say they bring these little communities out of the 19th and into the 20th century, for what that's worth. Actually, I kind of like the 20th century. How about you? At least some of the last half of it, anyway. So anyway, the mining companies come in, they give these guys jobs, they bring electricity, roads, schools, healthcare, etc. Then they go ahead and pollute the ground and the water. So now the local indigenous population's lifespan is around 65 years old, whereas before the mining company came, it was only 55. On the other hand, their environment is ruined. Now, like I just said, it's not that they don't ruin their own environments themselves. Come on down and you'll see that little towns don't have any central sewage system. All the crap goes straight into the lake or the river. They do what all animals do everywhere. They create their own petri dish. They overpopulate till they drown in their own feces and nature calls them back. Or they just move on, find another pristine place and pollute the hell out of that. So then what's the better alternative? Live to your 50 and die from parasites and tsetse flies or dengue fever? Or die at 65 from a massive kidney stone or gallbladder attack because you OD'd on subsidized Coca-Cola and Cheetos at the company store? I don't know. I'd like to know who really has the answer to that. Now, it's true. Many, many of the local indigenous people all throughout Latin America live to be 80, 90, even 100 years old. But I'm telling you, they're not living in these pueblos on rivers and creeks where they're polluting the hell out of their own life source. Sure, you see old-timers everywhere, and they don't have artificial hips and knees either. And forget about nursing homes. They don't exist in the poor and indigenous communities. Now, mostly the very old guys and gals that live productively, they're the ones living way out in the boonies on mom-and-pop farms. They're not so much living in tight-knit little towns where the water's terribly polluted, mostly with fecal-form bacteria. Don't have to go into detail on that. And terrible air quality. I mean horrible air quality in the home because of cooking with wood. It's been said the number one problem with early childhood death and distress is respiratory failure because poor people burn wood for cooking. So you'll get people in groups like Doctors Without Borders working out in the boonies. They'll come back and tell you, man, just living in those houses is like a 10-year-old kid smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day. So not only do these communities have a lot of fatal childhood respiratory diseases, even the majority that survive are very short in stature as adults. So stunted growth is not just about inadequate nutrition, as first world so-called experts will tell you. Oh, they'll say it's because first world children have so much better nutrition. That would be so many more Coca-Colas, Whoppers, and Happy Meals, right? One doctor said if you give an American kid the equivalent of 4 packs of cigarettes a day, well, they wouldn't allow you to do that. That would be cruel and inhumane. That's an experiment that would never fly. However, here in Latin America, well, that's an ongoing experiment with millions and millions of guinea pigs. And almost no one's talking about it. But where was I? Oh, yeah. Talking to that beady-eyed, snout-nosed, well-dressed slug from the Ministerio de Ambiente in Guatemala. He was working for their version of the EPA. Anyway, since all these pus-brained government functionaries are extreme gringo wannabes and they don't get to meet gringos very often at all, that means if you're a gringo, you can instantly get a conversation going with them. And occasionally they'll tell you things they just wouldn't tell one of their own. Now, if you meet enough of these guys like I have over the years, you can play them like a harp. A couple of false compliments, a couple of stupid references to my jammy or Disney World and all things gringo, then you're in. So, Señor Martinez, how about that Donald Trump? How about that Kim Kardashian? How about that Pitbull? Ain't it great he's got his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? What a talent. How about Mickey and Minnie Mouse? You think they're getting it on? Hey, don't laugh. Down here with idiot government workers, those are legitimate, intelligent icebreakers. So I kind of broke the ice in another way. I said, so you work at the Ministerio de Ambiente, huh? Of course, the conversation went down in Spanish. And I said, I know where that building is. It's in the back of the Costco. Real nice neighborhood there. And I said, you know, when I drive by, I can't help but notice all the beautiful new SUVs parked out in front there. I said, one of those is probably yours, huh? And he said, yeah, I have a silver Toyota Prado. Now, I don't know if they sell that model in the States, but that's a very expensive Toyota 4x4 Land Cruiser. Then I said, I noticed a lot of bodyguards and beautiful SUVs in front of the Ministerio de Ambiente, but I also noticed a lot of junks. Pickup trucks, cars, and vans with no headlights or taillights whatsoever. Busted out windshields. Not to mention, it's a busy road, so you've got chicken buses rolling by, bellowing out huge clouds of black smoke. I said, I know you guys in a new administration, you just came in, what, 2 or 3 months ago. I was giving them a little wiggle room there. I said, is any of that going to change under the new administration? It is the job of the Ministerio de Ambiente to regulate that stuff, isn't it? And man, I'll tell you, this guy didn't miss a beat. He did what all vastly overpaid slug-ass politicians do when posed a difficult or controversial question. He simply passed the buck. He said, oh, well, that's a transit problem. And we have the transit police who have their stops on their routes, and it's their job to check those trucks and buses and address those problems. And as he was talking, I was thinking, if I asked the head of the transit police that same question, he'd pass the buck right back to the Ministerio de Ambiente. So much for Big Brother, huh? Bottom line, nothing changes. All administrations get off to a roaring start. Everyone's excited, and after a while, a couple of months even, things peter out and it's more of the same. More of nothing. Like the man said, if God didn't like sheep, he wouldn't have made so many of them. Now, along the way, when you meet a dickhead functionary like this, or pretty much any normal, hard-working, decent Latin American in whatever Latin country you happen to be in, if you're sitting down long enough, they'll ask you what you think of the country. What do you like the best or the most about their country? By the way, if you're asked that question, don't say it's because of the freedom they have down here, because they won't know what you're talking about. They've got no other system to compare it against. They don't know what fascism is, oppressive taxes, overregulation, Big Brother, a welfare state, or free TSA or police anal probes. They're blissfully unaware of all that stuff. So anyway, don't be surprised if a Latin person asks you how you like their country. Of course, they're fishing for compliments, so go ahead and compliment, and chances are you'll have a friend for life. But I digress as usual. Where was I? Oh yeah, with the slug from the Ministerio de Ambiente. So yes, I bit my tongue and told that pus-headed slug a few nice things about his country. And then a little gringa girl and her brother, that must have been around 10 or 11 years old, sat down on a sofa close to us, and I noticed that the girl had a little toy in her hand. A toy tuk-tuk. And the little boy, a toy chicken bus, both hand-carved and painted. Nice little items, in fact. They sell those things at various little tourist shops. Extremely cheap, by the way. Actually, nice little remembrances and souvenirs that are really quite different and unique. I mean, really, forget about the rainforest whistles and shot glasses made out of coconuts, decks of cards with shaman heads on them, all the usual suspects, the tacky stuff. And the worst souvenirs, in my opinion, plastic Mayan pyramid refrigerator magnets. Yeah, I'm sure that's what Mayan kings had in mind for posterity. To be remembered every time you snitch a midnight snack. That junk, most of it, I bet's made in China. What I suggest, if you're bringing souvenirs back, is something really different. Like a detailed wooden handmade replica of a chicken bus. Anyway, this little girl's sitting there with a tiny little wooden tuk-tuk on her lap. By the way, all of us gringos know tuk-tuks are not indigenous to Latin America. They all come from India. Yes, both here in China and in India, they're called tuk-tuks because that's exactly the noise they make. And believe me, they make way too much of that noise. And you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, they've kind of invaded Latin America like an evil swarm of cucarachas. Now, when I saw that little wooden tuk-tuk on that girl's lap, something clicked in my head, and I said this to the guy from the Ministerio de Ambiente, otherwise known as EPA Light or Extra Light. Do you guys deal with sound pollution, noise pollution, that is? He said, oh yeah, we have our regulations, so many decibels for factories, etc. And I said, well, what about tuk-tuks? And he kind of rolled his eyes and squinched his nose in disgust and said, tuk-tuks, yeah, you know, they're here now and we're never going to get rid of them. You know, they're just like, and then we both said it at the same time, cucarachas. And I said, what do you mean you'll never get rid of them? He said, look, they're cheap, a couple of thousand U.S. dollars. They got three wheels and can maneuver practically everywhere. They've got a motorcycle engine in them, so they're very economical. They can operate in the rainy season. They've got a top on them. And even in the most touristy spots throughout Latin America, it rarely costs more than $2 to get you anywhere from point A to point B. And he said, out in the boonies, you can generally go from one end of a small town to another for around 12 to 20 cents. He sighed and said, that's why we'll never get rid of them. Then he added, I know, you gringos don't much like those things at all. Well, we don't either. And of course, he's talking about upper-class Latins who can afford SUVs with bodyguards, etc. Of course. In fact, I'll be willing to bet he and his family never, ever rode a tuk-tuk. And yes, gringos ride tuk-tuks all the time. Which further reinforces the fact, in the minds of Latins, that is, that gringos are kind of nuts. We still ride tuk-tuks even though we can afford taxis and cars. In fact, it's kind of fun. Meanwhile, upscale Latins wouldn't be caught dead in a tuk-tuk. What would their friends think? So, bottom line, you expat gunbies, wannabes, etc., I do not recommend chicken bus rides, but go ahead, take a tuk-tuk. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. And I said to the flunky from the Ministerio de Ambiente, you know, us gringos and expats and visitors and tourists don't mind tuk-tuks at all. They get us from point A to B. It's kind of fun. But we do hate one thing in particular. Tuk-tuks are terribly noisy. Even a block or so away from your hotel in the middle of the night, you can hear those things whipping by and it ain't pretty. They can be humble and quaint and fun to ride at times, but their sound levels are hideously annoying. Then I mentioned something that I'd been mulling around with a gringo motorhead who was down in Latin America for quite some time. He had his share of muscle cars up in the States and, you know, was a tinkerer. He said, Johnny, you know what? Any halfway decent mechanic slash motorhead up in the States could put together a muffler baffle system and knock the noise right out of those things down to almost nothing. He said, look, that little horizontal muffler coming out of the motor in the back end of each tuk-tuk is about as big as a shock absorber. He said, in effect, that kind of muffler's a joke. He pointed out there was so much space under a tuk-tuk's frame, you could easily install a muffler that was three, even four times as long. And if twisted or shaped into an S or accordion configuration, that would easily do the trick. He said there must be millions and millions of tuk-tuks in India, China, and here in Latin America, and millions of pissed off people because of the racket. He said, I can't believe no one's thought of that. And I said, guess what? You just did. So anyway, that's a conversation I had a while back with a true Detroit motorhead mechanic. And of course, he's also got a Harley or two. By the way, I asked him if there were tuk-tuks up in the States, and he said, are you kidding? No seatbelts, no airbags. Why, they don't even have padded dashboards, yet they will go in upwards of 40 miles an hour. That's when I said to my friend, you realize we both come from a different era altogether. Remember when we were kids? When you bought a brand new car, seatbelts were an option, and so were padded dashboards. And as for airbags, well, the only vehicle that had them back then was the Lunar Module. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Having a nice, friendly conversation with a pus-brained government flunky. Anyway, thinking about what my motorhead buddy had said about putting a big muffler on a tuk-tuk, I said to this guy, what would happen if some smart guy built an aftermarket muffler that could be bolted or welded to a tuk-tuk to reduce the noise level by, let's say, 60 to 80%? And his eyes widened, and he replied, is that possible, or are you just brainstorming? Actually, I'm making him sound smarter than he really is, since he didn't use any words over, I think, one syllable. Which, come to think of it, kind of makes him overqualified for government service now, doesn't it? I said, no, really, I think it's probably pretty easy to do. In fact, I have a gringo machinist friend who says he could probably rig one up himself. And then he said, with his eyes wide open, you know, I can't tell you how many complaints we get at the ministry about that very thing. Noisy tuk-tuks, bothering the tourists, waking people up. Then I said, let's say it costs $100 or so, you get it installed in a muffler shop, and that's it. Then he paused a while and said, we'd pass a law. I said, what? He said, yeah, we'd pass a law requiring all tuk-tuks to have that exhaust system. And then he smiled and looked at me and said, and you, my friend, can have the concession. Then he winked at me, and I looked at him, and he gave me another wink just to reaffirm. And that's how things work in Latin America. Gringos have ideas that they've percolated up in the States, and when they come down, they almost never end up doing said project. Instead, they get boots on the ground and find a niche and fill it. I mean, come on, modified tuk-tuk exhaust. Who'd have thunk, huh? Not to mention, who even knows what a tuk-tuk is unless they've been down to Latin America, India, or Asia? So anyway, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that nearly all the people that came down to my latest Expat Insider Seminar came down with their number one priority in mind. That is, have a plan B to get their ass and assets out of the country because they know the U.S. is going down the toilet. And they want to have a place to bug out when things get nasty. And consequently, talking to some of the guys and gals at the Expat Seminar, many of them, nearly all of them, were wondering how to get their assets safely down to Latin America. A lot of them, of course, having pensions or retirement funds, 401ks, etc. And I mentioned there are some perfectly legitimate safe ways to roll your 401k or other IRA into a special kind of IRA that can buy gold, silver, land, boats, houses, whatever, and they can be bought and held in foreign countries. And I believe the only restriction is that you cannot buy certain collectibles. Big deal, huh? That means, of course, if you come down to Latin America, you could have your gold and your assets right in your hands. Yet they're still within your 401k. Now, I know it goes against the age-old principle that you can't have your cake and eat it too. Believe me, tens of thousands of very astute people are doing it, and it's perfectly legal. Now note, a few weeks after every seminar, I put together a download of many documents and reports. This time there'll be around 40 of them. Many of them are my own private reports, and some are quite confidential. And included in that set of downloads, there'll be a one-hour-long MP3 audio explaining the details of that IRA program. And amazingly, it only costs around $135 a year to maintain this kind of IRA. Again, I don't make a dime off this stuff. I don't want to. I'm just trying to help you get your lifeboat supplied with all the necessary items so you'll be ready for the next big downturn. How much time do you have? Who knows? But I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen within the next 6 months to a year, which means my upcoming January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar will certainly be balls to the wall. I'll keep you posted. And finally, don't forget to check out the Expat Files YouTube channel to see all the cool slides, photos, and other stuff that go along with the audio. By the way, you might know I've instituted a new policy that if you call and do a consultation with me on your Plan B by Skype or phone, if you attend one of my future seminars, you'll get a refund and the call will be free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.